Hello, my name is Chuck Porritt. Welcome to my secondary website and to this video titled History on a Truck. I'm a Christian who believes that the universe is as old as scientists tell us it is, 14 billion years old. And I believe in the Big Bang, the idea that the universe suddenly sprang into existence from nothing 14 billion years ago. In recent years, it has occurred to me that I can portray the history of the universe on the side of a truck, like this one. I can represent a period of 14 billion years with a line that is 14 meters long. And if each of the individual colored sections in this line represents 1 billion years, then each millimeter, which is 1/1000th of a meter and about the thickness of a dime, represents 1 million years. So this is the illustration that I use to share my thoughts on the history of the universe. In the New Testament book of Romans, which some have called the constitution of the Christian faith, the Apostle Paul condensed the creation days of Genesis chapter 1 down to one verse. In Romans chapter 1 verse 20, Paul gave a brief A to Z summary of the Genesis 1 account, from the first thing that God created to the last thing that he created. Paul wrote, "For the invisible attributes of God are clearly seen, being understood through the things that have been created. Number one, his eternal power, and number two, his personal nature." God's eternal power is revealed in Genesis 1:1, where it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." I believe that the phrase "in the beginning" refers to the beginning of time itself, when God brought space, time, matter, and energy into existence at the Big Bang. At the same time, God imposed precise physical laws upon these things that would govern them as they began to expand outward in all directions. Paul said that the universe not only reveals God's great power, but his sustained exercise of that power never-endingly. As far as I'm concerned, a 14 billion-year-old universe filled with billions of galaxies does a good job of revealing infinite, eternal power. The Z of God's personal nature is revealed in God's final creative work in Genesis 1:26, where God said, "Let us make man in our image and according to our likeness." God's final creative act in Genesis 1 is a central theme of this website. I believe that when God created the first man, Adam, he created all of us at the same time and placed our souls within the Father of the human race. We were one with Adam, just as the Son of God and the Spirit of God are one with God the Father. This is what being created in the image and likeness of God means, a Trinitarian union of humanity within Adam. In the book of Romans, Paul points to God's eternal power and the image of God in mankind as the two great bookends of history. As far as I'm concerned personally, if someone's understanding of Christian theology does not build upon these bookends, then that person's understanding of Christianity is incomplete. When I attempt to explain biblical creation to other people, I am often confronted by two different groups that both base their opinions around the issue of time. Atheistic, materialistic scientists and evolutionists claim that time created everything without any God. For them, time, chance, and the laws of nature explain everything that we now see around us. Any consideration of a possible divine involvement in history is deemed unscientific and is banned from consideration. At the other extreme, there are Christians who believe that the creation days of Genesis 1 are 24-hour days. They insist that God performed his creative work on earth in six single consecutive rotations of this planet, in 144 hours. And they believe that the earth and the universe are much younger than 14 billion years. In Christian circles, they are described as young earth creationists. Essentially, their claim boils down to this, that God created everything without any time. These are the two extremes from which these two groups would force all of the rest of us to choose. Time created everything without God, or God created everything without time. In fact, these two groups are propping each other up. Each one provides the boogeyman for the other. Although they are enemies, they enjoy a racket that keeps them both in business. Atheists keep their followers in line with the claim that the young earth view is the correct explanation of Genesis 1. And so they insist that people must choose between evolution or a Bible that denies the obvious great size and age of the universe. Young earth creationists frighten their followers with the claim that any departure from their 24-hour creation days is a compromise with atheism and evolution, and represents the first step on a slippery slope toward denial of the Christian faith. The answer to both of these groups is found in the words of Moses and Peter. These men tell us, first, that time means nothing to God, and secondly, that God's days are different from our own days. Moses, the author of the book of Genesis, wrote in Psalm 90 that for God a thousand years is like a watch in the night. A watch in the night was the period of time, maybe 6 hours, that a soldier stood guard protecting a city or a fortress. In the New Testament, the Apostle Peter made a similar statement in 2 Peter chapter 3. He said, "Do not be ignorant of this one thing, that with God one day is as a thousand years, and a thousand years is as one day." Peter provides us with a simple and useful ratio. If a year consists of 365 days, then Peter is telling us that, for God, one day is equal to 365,000 days. This is Peter's ratio. For the sake of easy illustration, in this video, I place the beginning of our Earth and solar system where many scientists claim that it is, approximately 4 billion years ago. When we apply Peter's ratio to these reported ages of the universe and of the Earth, we get the following results. In God's sight, 14 billion years is the same as 38,000 years. 10 billion years is the same as 27,000 years. And 4 billion years is the same as 11,000 years. The Bible does not say that the universe is not 14 billion years old. What it does say is that time does not matter to God. Time may dwarf me, but it is meaningless to Him. Time is a created thing. It is a part of the fabric of the universe, of space-time. Physicists tell us that time is bendable by things such as energy, gravity, and mass. And this is exactly what Moses and Peter are telling us, that time is nothing to an omnipotent God. And so I must not let myself, as a Christian, get caught up in false arguments about time. It's also important to add that there is not a single passage in the Bible after Genesis 1 that insists that we must understand the creation days of Genesis 1 as 24-hour days. No one says that, including the Lord Jesus. A favorite argument by atheists against the Bible is based upon the issue of physical size. Atheists like Carl Sagan have claimed, because the universe is so large and our planet so relatively small, that we and our religious beliefs are unimportant. So let's talk about physical size. First of all, the human race exists at the very crossroads of size. We are not only small, but we are also huge. We are, to a subatomic particle like an electron, what the universe is to us. The ratios of these size comparisons are essentially the same. We occupy a position where we can not only look out across the universe and understand it, but also inwardly at the quantum universe of the infinitely small and understand that as well. And God Himself lives in all of these spaces. The Bible tells us that God has stretched out the heavens with His own hands and will someday fold it all up like an old garment and set it aside. And yet He also walks between subatomic particles and puts His wrenches on them. This is the true range of size in the universe. But atheists choose to ignore the quantum world as they seek to humiliate religious ideas with half-truths about size. They refuse to admit that our unique size actually points to our importance. And there is a second fatal flaw in the size-based arguments of atheists. They ignore the difference between physical size and spiritual size. I would pose this question to an atheist. Suppose I offered the planet Jupiter to you with easy access to all of its material wealth. You would instantly become a super trillionaire. But you would have to give me your child, and the trade would require that your child would cease to exist. Would you make that trade? Your answer might be an emphatic no, and I might respond by saying, but look how much bigger Jupiter is than your child. To be sure, there are many people in the world today who have already sacrificed children for the sake of their own pleasure and convenience. Nevertheless, my question reveals the foolishness of the atheistic argument based upon physical size. The size of physical things cannot be compared to the size of a human soul. This is why Jesus said in Mark chapter 8, "What shall it profit a man if he should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" Having addressed these various arguments regarding time and size, I will now share my thoughts about the history of the universe. Let me begin by saying that I believe in a gap theory, a 10 billion year gap between the in the beginning of Genesis 1:1 and our planet Earth being without form, void, and dark in Genesis 1:2. I believe that during this 10 billion year gap, the repeated formation and explosion of stars resulted in the great variety of light and heavy elements, the stardust, that would come together to form our undeveloped Earth and solar system. And so I divide the 14 billion years of history into pre-Earth and post-Earth phases. This is because I believe that God made two very important transitions when he began to work with our planet. Number one, God transitioned from working on a very large galactic scale to working at the infinitely small quantum scale. He went from engineering big things to engineering very small, incredibly complex and sophisticated biological machinery. I believe that what God has done here on Earth in his creation of the life that we see all around us dwarfs what he first accomplished when he set the universe in motion. While the universe reveals his physical power and genius, biological life reveals the power of his mind and wisdom and creativity. This is what the angels around God's throne were declaring in Isaiah chapter 6, verse 3. And one angel cried to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." Secondly, God transitioned from a strict separation between spiritual beings like angels and the physical world to the ultimate union of spiritual beings with physical bodies. He accomplished this when he created the human race. And God not only intended that we should inhabit these biological machines, but that he himself would also join us within these bodies and share them with us. Our bodies would become, as it is written in Ephesians chapter 2, a habitation of God through the Holy Spirit. It was a recognition of this incredible union between the physical and the spiritual that prompted King David's words in Psalm 139. "I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows right well." And so I come to explaining my understanding of the six creation days of Genesis chapter 1. First, let me say that the length of these days does not matter to me. What matters to me is the logical order of their progression, an order that I believe we see in the geological record of the earth. On creation day one, when God said, "Let there be light," our sun ignited and God established the fundamental relationship between our planet and the sun. Earth's distance from the sun, the speed of its rotation, the angle of its axis, and the path of Earth's travel around the sun each year. On creation day two, God established a water world, a cloud cover above Earth's atmosphere and liquid water covering the entire surface of the planet below. I believe that those early oceans swarmed with life, and I believe that this life is responsible for much that we find in the sediments of the earth today, like mineral deposits, natural gas, and petroleum. On creation day three, God allowed plate tectonics to elevate the sedimentary seafloor above sea level to become the continents of the earth. This is why when we look around the world today, we find sedimentary rock everywhere, often with marine fossils embedded in it. I suspect that the seafloor provided land surfaces that were rich in organic sediments and were ready to support the plant life that God would create and place there on day three. On creation day four, God opened up the cloud canopy which surrounded the entire earth. Contrary to the opinion of young earth creationists, Genesis does not say that God created the sun, moon, and stars on day four, but that he allowed them to become visible in the sky overhead, to inhabitants upon the surface of the earth. This is the actual meaning of the original Hebrew words of Genesis. When God opened the earth's cloud cover, he made three things possible. Number one, weather, caused by uneven heating of the earth's surface. Number two, seasons, that would change throughout the year as weather changed with the angle of the sun's impact upon a tilted earth. And number three, navigation and migration, made possible through a direct view of the sun, moon, and stars. On creation day four, God was setting the stage for the life forms that he would create on days five and six. On creation days five and six, God created bird life, marine life, land life, and ultimately human life. The lives of all of these creatures would be driven by seasonal changes and the need to migrate from one place to another using the sun, moon, and stars. In Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, God told Daniel that the last days would be characterized by an increase in knowledge and by people traveling back and forth. We are certainly living in those days. But what we are seeing is that there is no correlation between having great knowledge and doing good things. In fact, we often find that the more knowledge a person has, the more evil he becomes. Why is this? It is because as scientists explore the universe and biological life, they are confronted by God's creative glory more and more every day. But instead of being honest about what they are seeing, people choose to lie and double down on their refusal to acknowledge and glorify God. We all want to believe that increased knowledge and increased goodness are obtained together, that our smartest, brightest people, the builders of society, will make good choices. But where there is knowledge without an acknowledgement of God, even the most technologically advanced societies plunge deeper and deeper into darkness and evil. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is the creator and cornerstone of the universe. When we refuse to acknowledge and honor him, we doom all of our building projects to failure. As we read in Psalm 118, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our sight.